myself.
I'm going to call the meeting to order, even though people aren't in their chairs, and ask them to please get in their chairs. And Representative Dabney, you're going to be the very first bill. So if you could just hop in the witness table there. We do not have a quorum, members. I will not then be able to call the meeting to order or to approve the minutes. But because we have such a full schedule, we have to start. And Representative Dabney, any minute we don't start is your time.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome to the committee. We can't move your bill either till we get a quorum, but we do want to hear fully from anybody that you brought on what I consider a very important bill. So please start describing it to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the bill we're hearing this afternoon is House File 987. And in this committee recently, we've been talking quite a bit about globalization, and about the fact that Minnesota is in a different place in the world than it was, and that Minnesota is a different place in the world than it was. Often those discussions revolve around curriculum, and in the past few days in particular, they've focused more on globalization and technology. Today, I want us to put our focus not on curriculum or technology, but globalization in our student body. Instability in different areas of the world, particularly in East Africa and Southeast Asia, have brought new students, many new students, to Minnesota schools. Many of those students are able to be successful through English language learner programs when they enter in the early grades. But some of these students are coming to us at later ages with little experience in schooling. Our standards for success are higher than in past generations, and our standards for successful entry into the workplace are higher than in previous generations. This bill attempts to respond to the needs of a very narrowly constructed group of students, those who are bumping against the age 21 age cap for public education, those who are ELL students with less than 8 years of school, who have not completed yet a high school diploma, but with the assistance that we can provide them, can be expected to successfully achieve a high school diploma by the age of 23. I have with me several representatives from the Minneapolis and St. Paul school programs that serve these students and some of these students. My first testifier, Madam Chair, is Rose Santos, who is the principal of the International Institute?
International Academy.
Academy in St. Paul.
Welcome, Santos. And if you could please state your name again for the tape.
Yes, my name is Rose Santos, and I'm the principal of International Academy LEAP. It is a school that is designed for students who are new to the United States, who have been in the country less than 3 years. The students we service are between the age of 14 to 21 years of age. My concern is with students who come to my program at 18 years of age and who, through no fault of their own, are not allowed to continue their education. The students have been wonderful. The older students have been wonderful role models to the rest of our students. They come to school. Their attendance is good. They look at this as a privilege to come to school, and they do all they can to become successful. I have very little discipline problems in my school. If you were to, and invite all of you to come visit our schools. The students are studious, respectful, and they have a goal, and that goal is to graduate. And they know that they have to do this. A lot of my older students who are 20 years old have two jobs and yet find the time to come to school because they see that this is very important. A lot of the students have children, and their learning English helps them with their children, helps their children how to read and write, and helps them acculturate into this society. This is very, very important. In the past, our program has been in existence for 11 years, and until recently, we were allowed to keep the students. We had a partnership with the Adult Diploma Program, and we were allowed to keep the students up to 24 years of age, and that gave the students enough time to graduate. If we don't allow them to stay, their future is very bleak, because they will have to have two or three jobs in order just to survive in this society.
Thank you very much, Ms. Santos. And I understand, Representative Dabney, that you have other witnesses. Let me ask, do we have a quorum yet?
Yes.
Excuse me just a minute. I'm going to call the meeting to order. And if I could have a motion to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Representative Dominguez moves approval of the minutes. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The motion...
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Chair Moonbeam. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you very much. Best I know.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Representative Maria.
Madam Chair, you're going to enjoy your 40s.
I'm just glad I'll tell you, 1 year shy of my 60s. But thank you very much. I have some beautiful flowers as well from these two and my L.A. from last year. So thank you very much, and I'm so pleased that I get to spend the night with all of you as well. We're going up to Hinckley, in case anyone didn't know what that meant, for a legislative hearing.
You know, Madam Chair, in other settings that I'm familiar with, it's the birthday person who brings the treats.
Oh, I try to keep it quiet, though. But maybe I'll do that at a later time. Anyway, thank you. The motion prevails, and the minutes are approved. Now, Representative Dabney, would you like to move your bill and do the amendment before or after the next testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move House File 987 to be before the committee for possible inclusion in the K-12 omnibus bill. And at this point, I would like to move the 987A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author prefers.
Representative Dabney moved House File 987, and he is now also moving the A1 amendment. Do you want to tell us what that amendment does?
The A1 amendment narrows this bill further to focus on programs in the traditional public schools targeting specifically this narrowly constructed student population.
So Representative Dabney, the fiscal note gets smaller then with this change.
And that's always a good thing.
That's always a good thing. Any discussion of the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The amendment is adopted. And Representative Dabney, your next testifier.
Thank you. My next testifier is Ms. Carmen Pacheco, a student at the International Academy.
Welcome, Ms. Pacheco.
Hi.
If you could restate your name for the
happy
record.
Birthday, though.
No. I think we have to put all the bills today in the omnibus bill.
Well done. Okay, well, good afternoon to all of you. I want to thank you for allowing me to represent my school. I'm here to represent LEAP International Academy and all the students that are over to 21 years old or close to 21 years old. I wanted to ask you for your help for us to graduate high school. A lot of the students, including me, needs just at least one more year in order to graduate. Also, a lot of the students are parents. And in order for us to provide our kids a better life, we need to get a better job. Mm-hmm. And for that, we need to graduate from high school and continue with college. I want you to know that if you provide us the opportunity of continue school and finish high school, we will take advantage of it. We will make the best of us. We being over 21 years in the school, make us see it like a role model for the other students. Make us see like we are the seniors of the school. Some of us are involved in the student council and the service council in the school, and it makes us feel good of ourselves, makes us feel like, yeah, we're all enough, and we know we care about the school, we care about being in the school, involved in the school, because what we need is to get our high school diploma to be a better in our future. I don't know what else I can tell you.
I think you did a wonderful job, and obviously you're making very good use of your education. Thank you very much.
I'm doing the best.
Do you want to introduce the other students from the International Academy?
Please.
Here we got Mylia Vu. She is from Laos.
Mm-hmm.
I am Mylia Vu and from Laos.
Welcome.
My name is Nguyen from Cambodia.
Welcome. As you can see, we have a lot of different students from everywhere around the world. And I just want to thank you for giving me the chance of being here and telling you that we really need that last chance in order to survive.
Thank you very much. You're obviously getting your picture taken. You're such a beautiful group.
Thank you. Ms. Sarah Ballman, instructor at the Wellstone International School in Minneapolis.
Welcome, Ms. Dahlman, and if you could restate your name for the tape.
My name is Carol Dahlman, and I'm a social studies teacher at Wellstone International High School. And I'm here to tell you that these students feel an urgent need to complete their education as quickly as possible. I'd like to begin by asking them, both Wellstone and LEAP students, how many of you have taken summer school or after-school classes in addition to the regular school day?
Lots of hands.
More than I did in high school.
And they're doing that because their time is so limited and they are eager to finish high school, graduate from college, and begin to support their families as soon as possible. The problem is that when they reach age 21, there is not an appropriate program for them. They're too old to stay in high school, so we can't keep them. The adult education programs are designed for even older working adults, so they are part-time. And these students, as you can tell, want more than part-time. They want more than full-time classes. And even GED programs usually require a higher reading level than they have attained. They'll be there by the time they graduate, but they're not there yet because they are such recent immigrants. So if these students need to transition to adult ed, it will take them a year or two or 3 or 4 years longer to graduate than if they can stay in full-time high school. In Minneapolis, there are not even enough of these types of students to start a new adult ed program. So in Minneapolis public schools, we're talking about 30 to 40 students a year. And we don't really need a new program. What they need is to stay where they are already successful and just finish what they started. And this bill would allow them to finish in their full-time program, to go on to college as soon as possible, support their families, mentor their younger brothers and siblings and pave the way for them to go through college. And then in time to support their own children. These students behind me are going to be responsible for 3 generations, and they're eager to do that as quickly as possible, and we're slowing them down by pushing them into part-time programs. And the problem we've had recently in the last few years is that they don't transition to adult ed. We lose them and they drop out. And I'll run into them later and find out that they're working low-skilled jobs and they are not continuing their education. And I have an article that I'll just leave with Representative Dabney about from last Saturday's Star Tribune about how the poverty rate, the deep poverty rate, is increasing. And it's increasing in Minnesota faster than any other state, and it's attributed to recent immigrants. And these students are the ones who can turn that around. They're the ones who can change that by helping support their families. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dahlman. And Representative Dabney, you have one more person?
That's correct. Ms. Asha Mohammed, who's a student council president at the Wellstone High School.
A future elected official, or already an elected official.
Wait till you hear her.
All right. Welcome, Ms. Mohammed. If you could restate your name for the tape and then tell us your testimony.
Yeah, my name is Asha Mohammed. I am elected. I just want to let you know. I want to share with you some personal stories on the difficulties that I had or my other friends in my school had in the past. I am from Somalia, and I left my country because of their school. There was a war, and I lived in Kenya, and I I went to school and I get some education from there. I started, but I didn't finish it. And when I get here, I was having a feeling that one day I will be somebody, and I like to be a leader, and I will be a leader maybe one day. And when I get here, I went to school, and when I went to the school and I got the opportunity that Jesus knew that the light of my future, and when I tried, you know, to take advantage of it, there's this law that says if you are 21, you're out of the high school, as well as my friends too. And I can't even imagine how I feel at that time for me and my fellow students. And in addition to that, there's adult and transition classes that it doesn't fit us, because when we are going to that class, it may be a far ahead of what we are in at our level, or the other thing is it's maybe an English and math classes. We don't have science, we don't have social studies, we don't have any other things that we can do, we can measure in our future. So I don't want to say much, but I want to ask your support that we really need you, and we want to be a good citizen. We want to be a product. We want to be productive. We want to work hard. We have a long goal, so help us to succeed that goal that we're trying to do it now. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Muhammad. Representative Dabney was right. We did wait till we heard you. You had all the words we use in our campaign, so you're very good. So, Representative Dabney, that concludes your witnesses.
Yes, it does.
I don't see at this moment any legislators on the list. Is there any testimony for or against the bill from the public? Okay. There is a Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dabney, I support this effort. I've had the privilege of being president in a number of these schools with these populations. I've been at some of the graduation ceremonies. They're quite moving. There's a lot of heart and soul that goes into these students trying quickly to obtain their diploma. My question is, just briefly, if you can tell us, what's the magic around age 21 in current statute? Was it just an arbitrary age that we have? Was there some kind of logic, existing logic, in terms? And I know that this is prescribed specifically around if a pupil only meets all these criteria of English as a second language, less than 8 years, formal education, expects to graduate by 23. But in terms of making any kind of policy change, you know, what is it that we're saying different from past decisions that have capped this at 21?
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mariani. My understanding is a little thin in this area, but my understanding is previously the age for public education has in fact been higher and has been brought to 21, and I can't give you the history of the policy decision there. What the experience at the Wellstone School and the International Academy and other in other school districts around the state is that we've got a population, small but real, of folks who are just at that cap, and they're close, and they can see where they want to get, and as I think you sense today, they're highly motivated to get there, and so we don't need to take the cap off in a whole way. We simply need to try to meet the needs of this very tightly constructed group of learners.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, it certainly would be a shame for us to make that investment up to that point, and then we're out on our investment. Madam Chair, I believe Ms. Gilbert might be able to answer my question in terms of what the original logic is for having a hard cap at 21 here.
Ms. Gilbert, welcome. Please state your name.
Madam Chair, happy birthday as well.
Oh, thank you.
That was a good question. And previously, which of course gives away my age as well, there used to be the graduation requirement up to 21, and then there was a separate program called the Adult Diploma Program. And during some round of budget cuts, and I can't even remember what year anymore, the Adult Diploma Program was actually eliminated. So there was a separate program to serve these students that was separate from the public high school. So the Adult Diploma Program was phased out and was moved into the ADE formula for some of the programs that had it. And as we all know, the ADE funding hasn't kept pace with the demand as well. And so there's waiting lists for all of those programs right now. And the ADE program, as I said, does serve a different population. It tends to serve a different population, although we have tried to give these kids priority.
Thank you, Ms. Gilbert. We have three more legislators on the list, and then I'm going to cut it off because we need to get on to the next bill. And the first one is Representative McFarland.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm wondering if we have a fiscal note on this.
Representative Babney.
Mr. Strong.
Mr. Crow. Whichever one we'll call on.
Happy birthday. members, we've requested a fiscal note on the bill. It has not been completed yet, and we'll have to make some we'll revise the request for the fiscal note based on the amendment that was adopted in committee today.
Thank you very much. And I don't want anyone else wishing me happy birthday, members, because last night when I was eating popcorn, I cracked my tooth over here, and I don't want to smile anymore. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I really have to say it in Spanish. Bien cumpleaños, okay?
Muchas gracias.
Madam Chair, I rise to this occasion of Daphne's bill here. I think it's very important. One that has worked in an alternative school that worked with immigrant students, career for training, over on the south side of Minneapolis and also in Ridgefield, that worked with kids from 15 to 20. And I've seen a lot of those kids that could have gotten their diplomas, but the age factor worked in and they couldn't do it. And I think this is really very important. As you see, the kids are here taking their time to really get their diplomas and to work hard for this country and be a good citizen. I think we need to look at those things. As you know, a lot of our kids are being lost these days without education, and as we tour the school districts, we see that. So again, I am very much in for this bill, because I think it's going to help a lot of our kids that are really struggling. As you know, some of them are parents. They want to make a better life for their families, and they have a lot of support here. So again, I rise in support of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dominguez. Well said. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I won't comment on your birthday, but I will say it's my daughter's birthday today also, Madam Chair. So happy birthday to everyone having birthdays today.
Okay, there you
How's
go.
That?
Thank you, and happy birthday to your daughter. How old is she?
She's 18 today.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
You're older than you look, too.
I'll take that as a compliment, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Well, it was meant to be.
She's my baby. She's the baby of our kids. So. Moving right along. Representative Dabney, I hard to argue with the comments that have been expressed. I guess along the line of Representative Mariani about, you know, deadlines and, you know, whether arbitrary have meaning, you have in your qualifications less than 8 years of formal education as kind of a criteria, and you picked the 23rd birthday of kids who are going into this. And is there something about those two periods of, I mean, the other ones kind of make sense. If you already have a diploma, you don't need to. And I understand they have to speak English. But so why 8 years and why the age of 23? Your 23rd birthday also, it's a 23rd birthday date.
Representative Dabney, you're getting the same question at a different angle.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, again, this is an attempt to provide essential services to a small group of students. It is not a program for all ELL students. If you're coming in to Hayfield Public Schools as a kindergartner and ELL student, I think we should have programs and expectations that you will graduate
on time, or at least something that looks like on time. These are students who are not coming in at an early age and are not coming out of an experience where they had access to an academic experience previous to their arrival in this country. So it's a matter of square peg and trying to create a square hole.
Thank you, Representative Dabney, for a wonderful hearing. Thank you to all your testifiers and the ones who testified and the ones who did not. You're a very impressive group.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. House File 987, as amended, will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Knuth.
Good job, dear kids.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and I will move House File 980 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And there's a little bit of always the chairs, you know, as people leave, but I think with our time schedule, I will ask you to start anyway, and welcome. I know you'll introduce Mr. Volna, but I will welcome him as well, since I also represent part of this same school district. Yep. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm coming before you today and, with House File 980, and in the simplest terms, delving into the world of K-12 finance and someone who's not an expert. Basically, this bill will index the referendum equalization aid based on open enrollment percentages in a given school district. And I'm bringing this bill forward and supporting this bill because open enrollment is a policy that we have in the state of Minnesota. We support students being able to choose their schools, and we have districts not just in the Twin Cities, really all around the state that are having to levy higher in their own school districts, are having trying to figure out ways to make up for some of this money and in the state policy of open enrollment that we have. So this bill will basically put some state support behind the open enrollment policy in the state of Minnesota, and that's why I'm supporting it. And I have two testifiers in support of this bill. The first is Mike Volna, who is the school board chair in the St. Anthony New Brighton School District.
Welcome, Mr. Volna. If you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Michael Volna. I'm the chairman of the St. Anthony New Brighton School Board.
And please give us your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Grayling. Members of the committee, I'm pleased to be here to talk to you about House File 980. St. Anthony New Brighton School District is a very small school district in the northern suburbs of the Twin Cities. We pride ourselves on a high quality of education. Our high school is a double five-star school 3 years in a row. Our size allows us to provide a real high quality, personalized attention, educational experience to kids. About 46% of our students come from other districts through open enrollment. And what we have found, as well as about 15% of the other districts in the state of Minnesota, is that open enrollment at times can create a financial disincentive. And that is because that when you have large numbers of kids coming into your district, and there's a great disparity between the referendums that you may have in your home district versus the districts that are coming in, in fact, you end up having to educate kids with less revenue than you might if they were resident students. And so what 980 really does for us and for a lot of other districts is really align the resources and correct this financial disparity that occurs as a result of the state's policy of open enrollment. I appreciate very much your time. We think this is an important bill. As I said, about 15% of the school districts in the state of Minnesota are impacted by this type of phenomena, and so we believe it's a statewide policy issue that we think is worth bringing to the legislature. Thank you very much.
And Mr. Volna or Representative Knuth, are you going to introduce the other school board members? And
if you would, your superintendent, and other members.
Thank you very much. We have with us Jane Eckert, who's a school board member with the St. Anthony New Brighton School District, Leah Sly, who is a school board member as well with the St. Anthony New Brighton School District, Dr. Rod Thompson, who is our superintendent in St. Anthony. It's his first year here. He came down from Greenway of Coleraine to join us, and we're delighted to have him here. And we also have somebody else who will be testifying.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Mr. Volna. And the next person is Mr. Klain.
Yep.
Superintendent Klain. Am I pronouncing that right? Okay.
We have Mr. Bruce Klain, who's the superintendent of the Dover-Iota School District.
welcome to the committee, and Representative Heidgerken, he does not pronounce his name the German way.
Okay.
It should be...
I pronounce it the way my parents told me.
They Americanized it before you got a chance. Welcome to the committee. If you could restate your name and give us your testimony.
I will. Thank you for having me here. My name is Bruce Klein. I'm superintendent of schools at Dover Eota. Section 1A wrestling team champs, who will be moving on toward the state championship starting tonight at the Excel Center. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and talk about open enrollment and the good and the bad, if you will, of the program. I think we all know that Minnesota prides itself on choice, and there are some very good things about choice, and we appreciate the opportunity that we have to gain access students. However, when we tell people that the dollars follow the students, we're not telling the truth. Most of the dollars follow the students, and if we were pretty well funded with only formula dollars, then we would be correct. But as you know, in an unprecedented fashion, we're passing operating referendums around the state, and not all of those dollars equally follow open enrolled students. So as a result, you have funding situations where you have more students and you're not funding them at the same rate per student. I want to give an example, and I've had people say, well, it's a nice problem to have. Certainly it's a nice problem to have. I will not deny that. But it is a problem. And I'll tell you one of the ways that it's a problem. When we talk about the fact that there are so many operating referendums needing to be passed in the state, think about the difficulty of telling your own residents that you need an operating referendum to fill in the gaps of funding shortages. And when you say that you're going to go for $100 a student, that's $100 per resident student. So the argument is, wait a minute, I'm not going to pay for $100 per resident student, per student. I'm going to pay a smaller percentage of that, depending on what your percentage of open enrollment is. And meanwhile, those parents and taxpayers aren't going to help us pay for that. And so there needs to be a fix in the flaw. I don't know of any other way to word it, in that if we want the dollars to follow the students, then we need to address this flaw in how the dollars don't entirely follow the students.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Klein. Is there any testimony for or against the bill? There aren't any members on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll be very nice.
Yes, he's a promise.
And as you had mentioned, there's pros and cons. And I understand your issue, and you brought it forth very well. But also within certain districts, and I can give you a lot of numbers where parents will vote against a referendum within their district and send their kids elsewhere. And I know a couple school districts within my district that are doing that. And that's the other end. It'd be nice if we could figure out some way to do this right. And you do have the growth problem because of that. That isn't fair to you two. I understand that. So there's a give and take. And Representative Grinding, we've been going back and forth for the last 4 years over that issue, and we will continue to let they represent it.
It wouldn't be any fun if we didn't represent Heidgerken. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Knuth. I'm sure that you have looked at the spreadsheet that was prepared, and I'm looking at over this instant. Of course, all my schools get zeros, but that's not my main concern. My concern is, though, that if we add this other level of referendum dollars flowing, how are the taxpayers of a local school district going to feel about their hard-earned dollars flowing to another school district when they are the only people who got to vote on those referenda? Have you talked to anybody? Because this is the state follows the student, correct?
Mm-hmm.
But now some of the referendum dollars are going to follow.
Mm-hmm.
Actually,
no. Mr. Erickson, that isn't correct. Could we call on Mr. Strom to...
Oh, thank you.
That's right.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, under the way that Representative Knuth's bill is drafted, that there's an aid replacement essentially that follows the students so that the local property taxes don't move. The point was, the reason it was drafted that way is so that the local property taxes would not have some of their taxes sent to the next district. So essentially it's a new state aid.
Oh,
the $5 million is additional state aid that goes with the students.
Okay. And Representative Erickson, actually, for the very good point that you made.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. We don't want to be taxing people and sending it to another district.
Thank you for the clarification.
Good. Thank you.
Good question. All right. Very good. Thank you very much. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, then I had a little confusion. Mr. Cope can answer this then, because there are a lot of districts that are getting a minus adjustment on the referendum adjustment. Does that mean they're losing monies or not?
Mr. Strom or Mr. Crowe? Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, the printout in the fifth to last column shows the current referendum adjustment. And there is a negative adjustment that takes place now for some purposes, primarily related to charter schools, but that's adjustment that's in place now. It's all on the aid side, and the way that the aid calculation is actually made is for charter schools, they figure for each of the 20,000 charter schools what school they're coming from, and that amount of aid follows. The referendum aid portion follows them to the charter school. For school districts, the state uses a different process, and there it says the receiving district's aid levy mix is the one we'll use, and so every child coming into that district will generate aid at the receiving district's level. So for a district that's above the equalizing factor, regardless if the student's coming from a property poor district or not, the aid amount is always zero. So if you look, the effect of this bill is listed in the last column there, which is called increase in revenue, and that's the change in revenue that a district would get. Those are all positive numbers. That fifth to last column is the current referendum adjustment, and that's primarily for charter schools that those adjustments are being made.
Thank you very much. So, Representative Knuth, Representative Erickson.
Just a clarification. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Strom, the equalizing aid is not affected in this, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that's right. That amount stays the same.
Thank you. Okay. All right, we're all squared. Representative Knuth, any closing comments?
I think my two testifiers stated it well, and thank you, Mr. Strom, for clarifying some of those things. And I didn't need to pull in Scott Kronquist from AMSD, who knows much more about school financing than I do, but just to say that organization also supports this bill as well as some of the greater Minnesota districts. So thank you for the time, Madam Chair and members, and I'd ask for your support of this bill when it comes up in your omnibus.
Thank you very much, Representative Knuth, and all the testifiers for being here. And now we will lay aside House File 980 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you. Representative Peterson and Representative Heidgerkin. Now, we've had teamwork before with legislators, but in this case, this is really teamwork. Got a cooperative district that their districts overlap with. Representative Peterson, Representative Heidgerkin, I guess Representative Peterson, I will move House File 703, since you're not on the committee, for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Welcome to the committee, and also to Representative Heidgerkin. And I will let, I don't know which one is going first or whatever, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members, for the time. Reading from Mr. Strom's bill summary, this bill authorizes a school district that has participated in the Cooperative and Secondary Facilities Program to levy for certain severance and retirement costs. Sets it at $150,000 per year for each of the next 10 years and requires that the revenue received under this section be reserved and spent only for severance and retirement costs. There have been five groups of schools in the state that have participated in cooperative secondary facilities activities, one being Lacapaul Valley and the other being Minnewaska, two of the five represented here today. And many reasons that Superintendent Munsterman, to my right, can explain from Lacapaul Valley is that the severance authority that accompanied the 1995 cooperation and combination desires expired in 2001. So some district dynamics is that in 88 to 89, when prior to cooperative efforts, enrollment was 1538, and today it's 38% reduced in this district. So declining enrollment and loss of staff, which is down 46% since then, is placing obvious stress on this school district's budget, and they feel like, and I believe they are correct to be here once again to request this authority, because they did undertake cooperative efforts as directed by the state in the late 80s and early 1990s, and would like to get this authority. And it's been many years I've been in front of committees such as this requesting it, and hopefully this is the year before Superintendent Musterman retires that we get one for the home district, because in 1987 I was a sophomore in high school in Madison and woke up and didn't have to go to school for about a week because a student burned the school down. And that set into motion the cooperative and construction efforts in a large area, over 850 square miles of west central Minnesota, into one big district between towns. So there was no chemistry lab for me. There was no physics lab. There was really not much going on at Madison High School for the last 3 years that I was there. But since then, Lacapaw Valley has become a very good and prideful school, and they've had to take on a lot of senior staff as a result of that school fire, if you will. And their severance obligations are high, and they would like to have the authority to correct that, if you will. So with that, I don't know who we're turning it over to next, but Superintendent Bob Musterman is from Lacapaw Valley. He could give you some more details and reasons.
Superintendent Musterman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Appreciate you allowing us to speak with you here today. As Representative Peterson pointed out, Lacapaw Valley does have a very rich history of cooperation, and we pride ourselves in that because we feel it has really pulled our rural communities very closely together. And they have responded very well and shown a great deal of support through levies, referendum levies, and other ways as well. The cooperative efforts, as Representative Peterson pointed out, did help us create a very efficient and effective school district, not only financially but also academically. The problem that arose with that is, as he pointed out, we have, because of the cooperative efforts, and then coupled along with our declining enrollment and along with just lack of funding and resources, we have had to cut most of our young staff. And as a result, we have a very unbalanced staff. We have a very aged and very experienced staff. And as you can see on the handout, within 5 years, we will have close to 50% of those people will be at the retirement age. And that is going to place an undue stress on our district as far as severance and retirement. Retirement and severance are basically set up on two premises. One, that you have a diverse age in your staff, so you have kind of a continuous turnover. The other one is that you have a stable source of revenue to fund that severance. Because of the cooperative efforts and other things, we no longer have that diverse age level with our staff. And because of declining enrollment, we no longer have a stable revenue source to fund that. As you can see at the bottom of the first sheet of the handout, we have, as a district, tried to move dollars from our general fund into a designated fund to cover those obligations, because by law, we will have to account for that at some point. As a result, you can see what's happened. Our undesignated unreserved fund balance has declined at about the same rate as that designation fund has increased. So we're addressing the issue, but at the expense of our students, because if that continues, we will have to make more severe cuts, and then we will start losing that effectiveness that we gained through the cooperative efforts. The district has made contract language changes. The severance, the retirement benefits will sunset out of our contract in 2014. It's a phase-out period. We are a ways from having that phased out yet, but we have made efforts, and we're not expecting help for the long term. We need some help, levy authority, to get us through this time period when we're going to see a large bulk of our staff retire.
Thank you very much, Superintendent Munsterman. Representative Heidgerken is the next witness. Yours, I've got down here Greg O, but I suspect that that's not who. Representative Heidgerken.
Yes, at this time I'd like to move House File 1324, which is quite similar to Representative Peterson's bill.
Representative Heidgerken moves House File 1324. Representative Heidgerken.
And it's been very well explained by Representative Peterson. The same situation happened out here in Minnewaska. Some of you that have been on the education committees over the last number of years, where I've always alluded to what happened in Minnewaska when we took about 54% of their property wealth away in the 01 tax reform bill. And they've had some serious, serious issues, and as Representative Peterson mentioned, a number of years ago, the state encouraged schools to consolidate to save money. Representative Dietrich, I think you alluded to that. It's still happening out in your district where if the enrollment gets under 400 in a building, you kind of consolidate basically the buildings in order to cut cost. Well, they were encouraged to do that, and again, the money mechanism wasn't there. It should have been continued. The levy ability should have been continued further out than what it was done. There weren't enough tails there. And again, before I get into the real argument for doing it, I'm going to give the floor to the chair of the Minnewaska School District, Heidi Orbenkamp.
And could you please say your name for the record? And I didn't catch your last name, so could you spell it too, since we don't have your name down here?
Certainly. My name is Heidi Rogenkamp, R-O-G-G-E-N-K-A-M-P. My very German father-in-law would appreciate the pronunciation.
Rogenkamp, got it. Okay, welcome.
I am the chairperson of the Minnewaska District 2149, and I am also one of the 27 members of the Minnesota School Board Association Ambassador Program. A little bit about our district. You've got a handout of my talking points. In 1991, we did consolidate the districts of Glenwood, Starbuck, and Villard. This also incorporates the smaller communities of Lowry and Sedan. Geographically, we are a very large district. Anyone who's been in our area knows we have this tremendously large lake right in the middle of it. We're yet to find a bus that can cross that, however, so we do have some challenges with respect to open enrollment, and we deal with that accordingly. Similar situation with Lac Apparel. We retained the most tenured staff from each district as you consolidate, and this began also a time where we started to have tremendous decline in enrollment. Upon consolidation, we had over 1,800 students in our district, and right now we have about 1,168, so we've had a pretty tremendous drop. It looks to continue to decline for at least six more years, and then we should plateau, so we are aware of when that will stop. With funding issues. In 2002, 2003, and 2004, we attempted to pass operating levies in our district, ranging in amounts from $1,100 per pupil, $900 per pupil, and $800 per pupil, and did not pass. Throughout all of that, we had some drastic reductions in staff. We have now cut our staff up to the 15 and 16 year tenure mark, so all of our staff is very, very senior, very experienced. We'll be dealing with some pretty huge severance liability as well. Over that time, we reduced over $2 million in our budget, and for a small school district, that's a pretty significant amount. Our levy at that time was only 40 cents per pupil unit. Upon the failure of the third referendum, we had to close two of our neighborhood elementary schools, which created quite a controversy in our district, and we lost some more students, so that posed a challenge, and we have been literally exhausting our fund balance just trying to maintain as much curriculum as we can for our students. We have the largest class sizes we've seen at the elementary level ever. So with that, we finally were able in 2006 to pass a smaller levy referendum for $629 per pupil. It will not save us, but it will help us, and we do have some cuts to make. I've also made note that at the end of this school year, we are in statutory operating debt. We have extinguished all resources to try and maintain the quality education that we pride ourselves in. Through all of this, we've maintained very high test scores. We received recognition from the Department of Ed for 3 years straight for our test scores, so we've done very well. We have a 99% graduation rate. We do everything we possibly can for our kids, but we're literally tapped out. With the severance piece coming up, We are going to be making cuts. We see when we can be out of statutory operating debt. However, we are going to have a hard time with that severance piece. We were able to negotiate a 403B plan in the last round of negotiations, so our phase out does not come until 2020. So in the next 10 years, we are looking at $1.5 million in severance liability that we are going to have to pay. So that is kind of in a nutshell where our district is sitting. When people retire, we don't have a young person coming in at half the pay to kind of help cover the cost of that severance. Our people coming back in are on ULA right now and are on the top of the pay scale as well. So they're kind of replacing one for another for the same amount of money. So.
Thank you, Ms. Rokicap.
I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much. And the kind of the point of this is, unlike all the other districts with declining enrollment, you have these five districts that are qualifying under your bills have consolidated, so they have condensed high-cost staff with severance and retirement on top of open enrollment. So it's kind of a double whammy. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the superintendent and the school board member, are you paying your severances in cash, or have you rolled into the health benefits area? Have you been able to negotiate anything creative with the bargaining unit to save you from the cash going out, or are you still making cash payments?
Superintendent Musterman.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, the severance is set up that will go into a 403B plan, so the person receiving it and the district benefits from the tax benefits of that. We do have some health benefits that go with that. We pay a set amount per year, and then that is capped, and as part of the phase out, that reduces by a certain amount every year until 2014, when there is no longer any health benefit available.
Mm-hmm. That's a good move. How about
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Ms. Rogenkamp.
Yes. We have not had as much luck negotiating out of that as we'd like to. We do have our severance package is majority cash option. We do have some tied to the health insurance. It is to the tune combination, I believe, about $50,000 per retirement that the liability covers with health insurance, the long term, mm-hmm. and with the cash help. So we're not in as good of shape with that. We've been trying, but we finally got the 403B after four rounds of trying. So huge step.
Nice try.
Representative Erickson, and just another point to not mention, the faculty over there at Minnewaska forego, I mean, even when they were not in SOD because of the economic crisis they were in there, they forego this 2% staff development monies. They even gave that up. Yeah. They realized the fact they were working with the school board at this time together.
Mm. Is there any public testimony for or against this bill?
I have one comment, yeah.
Representative Heidgerken.
And just so that we're not establishing precedent, I know that's something that's always brought up. Nasabi had similar legislation passed in 2000, and at present the St. Paul School District is doing it for severance. The Minneapolis School District is also doing a levy for teacher insurance, as well as for non-teaching members of the Minneapolis public school system. They do have a levy in place right now they're using. So it's already being used in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Griffin. Any closing comments, Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I believe Mesabi East did this too in the early 2000s, and thank you for your guidance, time, and attention.
Thank you very much, and to your testifiers. Hope you can drive home safely before the snow.
Thank you.
Representative Saylor. Representative Saylor has two bills, and the first one, Representative Markwart, since you're the closest to that neck of the woods, would you like to move Representative Saylor's bill, House File 831?
Madam Chair, so moved.
Representative Markwart moves House File 831. Representative Saylor, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. We appreciate this opportunity to address you with a need that the Clearbrook-Gondick School has in accessing some health and safety dollars for an old building. Superintendent Diane Leith will explain all of the details, but I just wanted to highlight to members that this is a situation where the school districts of Clearbrook and Gondick consolidated, and they had the elementary school All the elementary kids went to Gonvick and the high school went to Clearbrook. And while the elementary students were in Gonvick, they were needing to use part of the boiler system and some of the infrastructure from the old building, the old vacated high school, to keep the elementary school, you know, functioning and heated. And at any rate, that was why they could not meet the cutoff. In 03 was the last year that they were, that school districts were able to use health and safety money without any special dispensation from the legislature for demolition of an old building. But because they were still using that facility and had not moved into their new building yet, that caused a complication for them. At this point, I will turn it over to Superintendent Leese to explain further the details of the needs that they have at the school district. Thank you.
Thank you. Superintendent Leese, if you could repeat your name for the tape, and welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Diane Leese. I'm the superintendent of the Clearbrook-Gonvick School District, and I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to explain why our district needs permission to use health and safety money to demolish the old Gonvick school building. The Clearbrook-Gonvick School Building School District is in northern Clearwater County, adjacent to the Red Lake Reservation. We have about 500 students in our district. It was recently consolidated about in 1995. We're proud of our students, and it's the school is a source of community pride because we have a number of wonderful programs, including a pre-engineering program, Project Lead the Way in grades 6 through 12. All-day kindergarten, reading intervention, QComp, and comprehensive school reform. So we have a lot of good programs going in our brand-new facility. In 2001, the voters of this district approved a bond referendum for $10.9 million, and we built a new school just north of Clearbrook. This caused problems then with disposition of the old school buildings. And the old school in Clearbrook was sold to a party of five. The school district used health and safety money to remove asbestos in the building and also to remove the fuel tanks, and then were able to sell the building. So it's being used as a business by the city for offices and by a nonprofit organization. And the building in Gonvick has been a bigger challenge, and that's primarily because of the old three-story section. And as Representative Saylor mentioned, we were not able to demolish the old three-story in previous years because part of that building was used as a cafeteria and the boiler system was located in the old three-story. When we moved out in 2003, we moved into our new building, and now this building in Gonvick is completely vacant. The windows have been broken, the building has been vandalized, and we need to demolish the old three-story portion of that building in order to make it usable. We've been talking with the city and with a party that is interested in using the newer portion of the building and turning it into an assisted living center, which is needed in Clearwater County. The problem that we have is that demolition is currently not allowable through health and safety money. And as Representative Saylor mentioned, prior to the year 2003, it was permissible to use health and safety money for demolition of an old building. After 2003, we need special legislation in order to be able to do that. And this is legislation that has previously been advanced by, for instance, the Ulan-Hitterdal district and was approved by the legislature a couple of years ago. Our situation, our financial situation, is not good. Because of declining enrollment, we've gone from about 600 students in 2001 to 500 students today, and we have declining enrollment problems. So we've faced a number of financial issues. Our unreserved fund balance is very low. It has been as low as $57,000, and now we're trying to build that up gradually. But we have a budget of over $4 million, and we should have a much higher fund balance just to cover our costs. We've had to issue aid anticipation certificates for, at one point, up to $1.3 million, and now this year we have aid anticipation certificates for $400,000 that we have to repay in fiscal 08. So we do not have the money to be able to do this without this authority to levy under health and safety. So the ability to use health and safety money for demolition will allow the district to advance this goal of disposing of our old buildings and putting our resources into curriculum as we have been trying to do. And we respectfully request that the legislature give the district the authority to use health and safety money for demolition. This is 100% local levy money, and it's something that the school board wishes to do. That building is becoming more of a liability every day, and our insurance company has expressed concerns, so it's a big hazard. You can take a look at the back of your sheet, and you will see the old building in back. It has some broken windows up there. This is the newer portion in the front, and then that would make that portion usable for community purposes. Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, for this opportunity.
Thank you, Superintendent Leach. Is there any public testimony for or against the bill? Okay, there's no members on the list. Any members wish to ask why this was eliminated in 2003? Maybe why don't we just ask the staff, why was that eliminated? I can't remember. Why did this option? Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, members, in 2003, changes were made to the health and safety program for two reasons. One was that it saved money on the overall cost of health and savings, health and safety. I believe the legislature saved about $10 million a year off of the target by eliminating some activities. So that was certainly a part of it. The other part of it was the department felt that the standards that were in place were too loose, so that the department didn't have a clear sense of what the legislature wanted to accomplish. And some of the issues, particularly those surrounding new construction or demolition that accompanied other kinds of remediations, were the big issues. So essentially the actions of the 2003 legislature made it much clearer, but also much tighter as to what could be done, and also saved about, I believe, about $10 million a year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Strom. I sat over there the last time I was here, and I got mixed up already. Representative Anzels.
Madam Chair and members, and especially Mr. Strom, I really appreciated that explanation, the history. However, if anything that I've heard cries out for a return to some common sense partnership between state government and school boards, it's this bill. Mm-hmm. And if anything sends a signal to boards of education more clearly that for some reason we don't trust boards of education to make these kinds of decisions, it's this issue. So just
a
thought.
Thank you very much. A lot of us have been local government but officials. I suspect if we pass this bill, that will trigger us to have to come up with that common sense policy rather than just take a lot of more piecemeal ones. So thank you very much, Representative Saylor and Superintendent Leach. Looking at that picture is worth a thousand words.
Thank you.
Yeah. Safe journeys back. And then Representative Saylor, on that bill, we will now lay over House File 831 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Saylor stays put, and I will move House File 1147. For possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And welcome to Mr. Hammett and Representative Saylor, if you could explain the bill first.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, once again. This bill is basically to just fix up a little wording problem that occurred when the shootings occurred at Red Lake School in 05. There was money appropriated to help get the school building put back into shape, and also to meet the requirements of safety regulators and the federal government. This bill simply addresses the fact that at that time the wording said to the Red Lake School building, or, you know, and so to the high school, the Red Lake High School. However, what happened is that the federal regulators and others required that two other facilities, two other elementary schools not located contiguous to that building, had to be upgraded as well. And so this bill does not it's not asking for any additional money. All it's doing is allowing the school district to apply those monies to the other two buildings. And so it's not going to be anything that would cost the state anymore. We just need to allow this district to apply it as it needs. And I will now defer to Monty Hammett, who will explain or take any other questions on this bill.
Thank you very much, Representative Saylor. Welcome, Mr. Hammett. If you could restate your name for the tape.
Thank you. My name is Monty Hammett. I work with the Red Lake Public School. And Madam Chair and members, if for just a moment, I would really like to, if I could, introduce our board members who are here. They have been so dedicated to the causes for our children of Red Lake. We have with us our chairman, Arnold Pemberton, up in the back. We have our vice chairman, Keith DePoe, here with us in the back. And we have our clerk, Barbara Thomas. And these folks have really been dedicated over the years. And we thank them so kindly and for here to help in any manner that they can with the state agencies and this legislative body.
Welcome to the committee, all of you. And since I was actually up at Red Lake last year with Representative Saylor, I know how far you have come. And I hope you're going to spend the night here and not try to get back in the snow or else hurry back after the committee. Mr. Hammett.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Real briefly, this is a clarification from last year's bill, and we certainly will take the full responsibility for the error that we made in the presentation last year of not including the bill to say Red Lake District facilities. It only said Red Lake High School. And consequently, your agency did a great job in making sure the preservation of the intent of the legislature was carried out. It was only the high school that we could extend part of the $474,000 of the appropriations that were made. And there's a balance of $132,000 that the district has already spent, and we're the bill now states Red Lake High School. We'd like to recapture those dollars for the security purposes that have been addressed in the school.
So, Mr. Hammett, this is just a wash for the state.
That is correct. This money's been appropriated, and mm-hmm. District is spent. We'd like to get some recovery from the state.
Okay. Any public testimony for or against this bill? I didn't see anybody. Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Superintendent, we see us here. We're scrambling a little bit just to clarify what happened in 2005. We were looking at one bill which suggested that maybe the amount of emergency money was $50,000, and so we're trying to clarify the $50,000 and the $132,000. I'm sorry to put you on the spot and wish I could give you a more prepared question than that.
Madam Chair and members, we are very pleased to address that. That was in House File 4162. In fact, I have that with me, and it was on line 3421 that there was $50,000 that was appropriated. That $50,000 on line was scratched on that line. Line 3422, $524,000 was initiated to bring the balance down to $474,000. And that's in 4162.
And then, Mr. Hammett and Representative Saylor, I was just informed by staff that we need a clarification, though. This actually would be a cost for our budget this year, because when money is not all spent in any given year, then it's assumed it would go back to the general fund, and then if it needs to be spent again, it needs to be reappropriated. So, Mr. Strom, did I get that correct?
Yeah. Madam Chair, we've got a couple issues here, and okay. Mr. Cohen, I'll address separate ones. One is, if the way appropriations work, if an amount is appropriated at the end of that year, if it's not been spent, it essentially cancels back. And so part of it is we'll need to try and make sure that we get this in the same fiscal year, because we simply can't give it carryover authority and have it not count as new money. Mm-hmm. And the other issue Mr. Crow's going to address is what happens when a use is changed in a program.
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, this kind of goes to a general budgeting concept that we get into when people find out about kind of pots of money that aren't spent. In other words, you say, well, I know there's this money in this appropriation that's not going to be spent. Let's just take it and appropriate it for something different, then it doesn't cost anything. Well, according to our budget practice, we have, when you look at a forecast, if you look at the detail of the forecast, there's a line that says cancellations. And that is any money that is in an appropriation that is not projected to being used. So if a bill or an amendment substantially changes what money can be used for, basically the presumption is we're taking it out of that cancellations line, so it isn't kind of free money in that sense. In other words, it's new spending, it counts against the committee spending target, and
in this particular issue, because the change goes from the high school to the whole district, it's a little, I probably have to have some discussions with Bill Marks about whether this is a substantial change in the appropriation. But we do have the issue that Mr. Strom alluded to, which is that this is a fiscal 2006 appropriation that would have already canceled at the end of fiscal year 2006. So the money isn't available to be expended. And so so a bill like Representative Saylor's would count against your target in terms of the appropriation of the $132,000.
Okay, thank you very much to the staff. I know that Red Lake also has a bonding request, and you know, there's going to be a bonding bill this year as well. So maybe we can, you know, work with the bonding committee and work with this committee and see what we can work out. Mr. Hammett.
Madam Chair and committee members, didn't realize that the fiscal constraints are within the regulations, and the district certainly wants to make sure that we follow within those, and this is something that I'm sure that the Board of Education and the district would take the position to move forward into the next phase, and we can cover whatever problems in the next bill.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much. Representative Saylor or any other members? No. Representative Saylor, any closing comments?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. I would just like to stress again, you know, the fact that due to the wording in the initial appropriation, we don't feel, or I certainly don't feel, that the Red Lake School District should be penalized simply because, you know, the vernacular wasn't exactly correct for all three facilities when that was indeed the intended requirement of the federal government and others with regard to rebuilding and putting in all those safety requirements that they told the district that they had to put in.
Representative Taylor, was that language in the bill, or did it somehow get garbled in conference committee, or do you have any idea, or maybe not, or Mr. Hammett?
Mr. Hammett?
The language, to our opinion, it came out in the wrong context, and if you recall that, pardon the question, but this after 321 is when this was drafted between them and the end of the school year. We were kind of under the impression that the language here would be very similar to that in the bonding bill, which you have 5 years from the date and the year of which the dollars can be used, and if you've got unexpended dollars, they can be moved by the legislative body into the next year, which we've done, and we did have some unexpended. We like to say we came in under budget and on time, and we thought that these kind of fell into those same categories. Evidently they don't, but you know, if there's any consideration for this, we'd be more than happy and appreciative of the consideration the committee could give, and we'll be glad to work with them in any manner.
Thank you very much, and coming in under budget and on time is always commendable.
Thank you.
We hate to be punished for that, don't we?
Yes, we do.
All right, very good. Thank you, Mr. Hammett and Representative Saylor and all the school board members and representatives of Red Lake.
Thank you very much, and many more.
Thank you. Is Representative Norton here? Oh, there she is, way in the back. Representative Norton, welcome to the committee. Do you have someone that you want to move your bill, or should I move your bill?
You may move the bill, Chair. That would be
all right. I will move House File 982 for Representative Norton, and welcome to the committee and to Mr. Call, and please tell us about your bill, Representative Norton.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here. Last spring, ISD 535 sought and received legislative permission for a one-year pilot, and that gave them one additional week, an extension beyond the mandated date of September 30th, to certify their preliminary property tax levy. This was done with the approval of the two county auditors and that we certify with, and in that case, it was October 8th. That we had to certify, we certified a preliminary levy. The school district softened beyond the September 30th date in order to give us more time to accurately certify the levy to our taxpayers. In fact, this past September, we were still getting adjustments from the Department of Education, and they came even as late as October 2nd, which was several days after the October 30th deadline. So the extension worked very well this past year. Our business office then has time to review the state figures, seek additional information when it's needed, and be sure that the preliminary tax levy figure that we used in our school district was as accurate as it could possibly be. We did not have to certify the maximum simply to protect ourselves, as we had been doing in the past, and we were protecting ourselves from last-minute adjustments from the state. And so we would, our history had been to automatically certify the maximum, move forward and make adjustments after that point. And I can tell you, as a former school board chair, having done that and then having tried to explain to taxpayers when the statement comes that, no, we're really not going to increase your taxes by 30%, we just did that to protect ourselves, does not go over very well, because what they see is a 30% school district increase. And that all the talk in the world doesn't change that. So the request came before this body a year ago for the pilot. We implemented it. It gave us an extra week to get the correct figures from the state, put them on paper, have them looked at, and then present a far more realistic tax levy to our community that came out on those little postcards that they received in the mail. So it worked very, very well. We certified last year on the evening of October 3rd, reported it to the county auditors on October 4th. And so this fall, what we would like to do is, what it would allow us to do then is, again, October 2nd, which is 3 or 4 days after the current deadline of September 30th, and then we would get it to our auditors on October 3rd. And so we've talked to our county auditors. They have no problem with it. As far as we know, and all the feedback we've gotten, last year's pilot worked very well. I don't know if this is something that could be done statewide on a voluntary basis, but we do know for our community it works very well, and we would like, regardless, to go ahead with this again next year. So again, this policy is a change just for Independent School District 535. Works very well, and it won't cost the state a cent, which is always a plus, I'm sure, in the committee.
So we like that very much.
Yeah, I think it's might. And so I know the Department of Education also testified in the Senate when they heard this bill, and was supportive of this as well. And so John Call, which is the school district's lobbyist, is here, and he may have some comments to add.
Representative Norton, just before we go on, in the bill on line 1.9, it's got October 31st. That's the date you wanted?
It says October 31st, and I do believe the superintendent, I spoke with him last night, and he said they would be more comfortable with an October 8th, not the school district, but the state, would be more comfortable in the auditors with an October 8th deadline. So if we could do a verbal amendment, and I was going to offer that, and if you'd like to do it now, that would be fine. What they're seeking really is the 1 week addition.
Members, since Representative Norton is not on the committee, I would offer on line 1.9 an oral amendment. Instead of October 31st, it will be October 8th. And if there's no objection, I'll just incorporate that for her into the bill.
I appreciate that.
All right. Mr. Call.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I don't have much to add except to say that the reason this worked is because it was voluntary. I think our original bill, if memory serves me correctly, was not, and not all counties have the same capacity to do this or have the same kind of working relationships that this county, these two counties have with the school district. So it was something that worked out well because of those relationships, so it needs to be voluntary to work, I believe. With that, I'll just give the committee more time to consider something else and conclude my remarks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Call. Representative Markport.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, you know, I actually have some bills in that actually moves the time when those proposed levies have to go from, right now they're November 10th to the 24th, move them into mid-October, so those come out before Election Day rather than after. And I think that might be a little more accountability. And I don't know, Madam Chair, this would have to go to the Property Tax Division, too, because we have a day when we're looking at truth and taxation processes. And my question is, you know, it is just a proposed levy. And many times, you know, you can never go higher. You can always go lower. And I do, you know, if we start getting a hodgepodge system in this truth and taxation, you're going to have different times depending on different school boards. And you know, we don't have the auditors here. And I tell you, when I went to try to change the process, it was like we were, you know, sending a rocket to the moon. It was that difficult to change any of that. So I'm surprised the 87 auditors in the state aren't here, you know, knocking the doors down, but, you know, what is the, I mean, is there a real reason for this, or, I mean, granted, I know you look for time, but if the state isn't getting to you early enough, then maybe that's the problem, but for being a proposed, this isn't a final levy, it's a proposed one, and I just have real concerns of changing it, for one, and creating a system where we're going to have all of these various things, and, you know, when you come to the property tax system, it's so complicated the way it is that I like to try to simplify it rather than make it more complicated. I understand what you're doing, but, I mean, does this really have to be done, or is this, I mean, is it really the state problem of getting information to you too late? Or?
We have the property tax division chair asking some hard questions, and so I don't know if Representative Norton wants to go first, and then Mr. Call to add on to that. I would be interested to know what committees, just because of the question of re-referring it, it went through last time. Did it go to the tax committee and so forth? But Representative Norton first.
Well, I can't answer that specific, and maybe Mr. Call can, but to the other concerns raised by Representative Markworth, this is only asking for one district, so we're not going to have a hodgepodge this year with this bill. I'm not addressing what other bills you might be hearing. My superintendent feels very strongly that this was necessary. We tried it. It worked very, very well, and he would like to continue it. Would it be nice for all districts to be able to do this? Perhaps. Do you want to change dates and move them? Perhaps. I just know for this request, this works very well in our school district. The auditors were not opposed to it. In fact, the Superintendent Williams worked very closely with everyone involved in it, and for our district, this worked well. And I can tell you, having chaired that meeting, as I mentioned before, trying to explain to the community who does not understand taxes like you do, who does not understand school district policy and funding like I did as a board chair, no matter how many times you said it, what they saw in front of them was, and I believe it was 32%, maybe you remember, 32% increase in property taxes. That was never the intent. In fact, it was well less than half that finally was approved. But we could never break through that barrier, and there's still people angry today. So that extra week this last year gave us time to do it right.
Mr.
Madam Chair, Representative Markworth, I want to underscore it. It is something that the district really would like to have. They'd like to continue to have this ability to negotiate on a voluntary basis do this. As I understand the situation, it's complicated. I think everybody is constrained for time. The department needs to get some certain information, and it takes a while to get that. They have to then get it ready to give to districts, and districts have to get it ready to give to auditors. So I don't know what the fix is, but this is something that's worked really well and is important to the district, and maybe this could provide a rationale for taking a look at the whole process and seeing if there isn't some way to fix it in a larger context.
And Mr. Call, where did this bill go through the tax committee last year?
Madam Chair, as I recollect, it did in both bodies.
It did.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, it was in the K-12 bill, but ultimately included in Article 4 of the tax bill last year.
Okay.
So it was heard in K-12, but it went with the tax bill last year.
All right. Mr. Representative Markworth, I rest my case. These are the sorts of things the K-12 committee tends to work out, and the tax committee is more apt to do the hodgepodge. I was making that point to him earlier.
Clarification, that did not come from me. That came from the chair.
I get a freebie. But, you know, we talked about the swimming pool levy for one district. That was not this committee. That was the tax committee, not Representative Markworth. I'm sure he didn't support that, but others. And then we had the alternative school levies, you know, just for the big districts, and that was not this committee. That was the tax committee. And, you know, we are so committed to evenness and fairness in this committee that when we have that kind of thing and it happens, we wonder, where did that happen? And we check into it. It's usually the tax committee. But anyway, Representative Markworth.
Disregard my comment.
All right. Do you want to see the bill, Representative Markworth?
Madam Chair, there is a day when we are hearing truth and taxation bills. And so, if you wouldn't mind, yeah, I probably would. I forget what day that is, but it's
March 13th or something.
That's the levies, but the truth and taxation process bills are, I don't have it in front of me, but why don't we just.
All right. Well, then, if there's any other questions, I am going to call on them while I figure out where we have to send this. I suspect we can't just send it to you. We've got to go through 20 chains and back and forth and then to you. Representative Marquardt. Okay. Representative Marquardt, thank you. We will, and if you do decide to want it, we will check with staff and figure out what the proper motion is, and we can maybe do it on the floor. And otherwise, we'll have a continued pilot in this committee, but we'll just know where it came from.
And thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to say, when I was the mayor of Dilworth, we used to wait for information from the assessor to get what our tax capacity was, because then we could decide what tax rate we could apply and get them. We could never get those numbers, and we ran into the same type of problem where we'd end up going higher. So I certainly sympathize with that. So I think we just need to get on the various units of government that aren't giving us the information in a timely fashion. So no, I don't want to hear that, Bill. I'll just
all right.
Be angry at the state.
Representative Marquardt, please get on those people and do something in your committee about these problems that all the districts actually do have. Rochester's just gotten smarter than the rest of it.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, any other questions? Representative Morgan. He's decided to pass. Members, we're done 5 minutes early. Thank you very much. I will lay House File 982 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. The meeting's adjourned, and we'll see you all at 5:30. Is that right? It's 5:15 at the east side of the State Office Building for Hinckley. And as good as a Faust, is there anything you want to say about a preview for us before we tap this gavel?
No, just hope you all come along and have a good time.
Thank you very much.
And if we get a lot of snow, we'll have to stay at the casino, so bring your change.
All right.